Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward. Together, that's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in Wisconsin politics in the Capitol. First, Wish I Was There. Jason Stein, a fellow Capitol reporter and avid hunter, talks about passing on the hunting tradition to his son. Then we'll hear more about the opening of the gun deer season on Saturday. Chief Justice Pat Rogenczak said opioid addiction is clogging Wisconsin courts. And welcome, Malin Mitchell. I think you're the 16th Democratic candidate for governor. Wish I Was There.
I took my 12-year-old out, and we had one gun between us. I could have carried a gun because he has passed hunter safety, and I could have carried a gun to hunt geese with. But, you know, I did not, and I will say for people to consider just taking that one weapon, it really does let you have your mind and your hands free to focus on that younger hunter, which really... I think that's what passing the tradition is all about in many ways.
You know, we've had organized deer seasons in Wisconsin for, I want to say it's about 100 years now. You know, in the early 1930s, we started the archery season in Wisconsin. We were the first state in the country to have an archery hunt. Big time of the year for lots of people. This is bigger than Christmas for them.
About 43% of all kids are born to unmarried parents. If you look at parents under 30, it's over 50%. Most of those children will experience family complexity and fluidity. So they'll cycle through multiple types of households and family structures, and most of them will experience multi-partner fertility on behalf of one or both of their parents. So their parents will have children with someone else. And over a third of kids will live with a parent with whom they're not biologically related at some point.
Even the Constitution we live with today has all of these prohibitions and limits on what the presidency can do. It says very little about its explicit powers. I think the Constitution is about 8,000 words, and about half of it, 4,000 words, is in Article 1. It's about the legislative branch. This is the first branch of government. The president is the second branch of government, as Eric pointed out.
The scourge of opioid addiction cuts across all races and economic levels. Opioid addiction does not discriminate based on marital status or based on gender. Opioid addiction clogs our courts as we address law violations, which often have opioid addiction as a contributing factor. It also cripples our families when parents become addicted and no longer provide a stable and safe home for their children. Our courts have risen to the challenge, not just in regard to handling the crimes that often follow those addictions, but also in regard to very significant efforts to turn around the lives of those people who have become addicted.
Are you fired up?
Yeah!
Are you fired up?
Yeah!
Are you fired up?
Yeah!
That's good, because my name is Malin Mitchell, and I approve this message, and I hope that you do too.
J.R., Senator Ron Johnson, our senator, made the front page of the New York Times and a lot of front pages yesterday.
Oh, yeah?
He said, I'm a no on the Senate tax reform plan. Were you surprised by that?
Yes and no. On the one hand, Ron Johnson, his first term, really wasn't somebody who got a lot of national attention. He was kind of like, almost like being a senator was kind of a burden to work on the issues he wanted to work on, which were the deficit and repealing the Affordable Care Act.
We'll come back to the deficit.
He has seemed to kind of grown into the job or feel emboldened in this job now. He's won re-election. He won re-election without help from Mitch McConnell, who basically abandoned him until last week of October.
And then at one point he told McConnell, I'm not voting for the health care repeal. Okay, and then he backed up on that. Go ahead.
So he's somebody who isn't running for re-election in 5 years. He isn't beholden to the majority leader, so he can kind of say what he wants to say. And his issue is that this tax package, in his mind, does a better deal for corporations than it is for these small business called pass-throughs, limited liability corporations, which he, by the way, helped start and so owns a piece of, I believe. that they're not treating as well as corporations. That, to him, is a problem, and he wants that addressed. For Johnson, it's interesting because with health care, he piped up as well. But when push came to shove and it was time to vote for the skinny repeal, these other, he voted for him.
He was there.
So with this, when push comes to shove, will he be there for the Republican tax plan? Because if you don't pass this, you know, what can Republicans say they've done, been in charge of all three, you know, the House, the Senate, and the White House?
Right.
What's their accomplishment? And two, this option may not come up again for many, many years. It's been how many years since we had
it? I think it was 86.
Tax package.
Yeah.
So will he really stick to his guns and say no? Bob Corker has raised concerns. Susan Collins from Maine's raised concerns. So
because you're folding in the repeal of the mandate on the ACA.
And all these other issues about the deficit, that, you know, how to impact the deficit, these various tax breaks that would go away that benefit middle-class families, on down the line.
But you've heard the speculation from those in Washington, all the Washington's punditry class. This is nothing but Johnson's initial bargaining line.
Yeah.
If they sweeten it so the path to our corporate rate under the Senate would go from 35% to 20, I think I have that right?
Something like that.
Okay. But the pass-throughs, the one that are taxed on people's individual income taxes, no similar tax cut. But he seems to be saying, this is what I need to vote for the bill. So do you and I both kind of agree that eventually he gets there?
More than likely. What's also interesting is Jim Sensenbrenner, who was the dean of the congressional delegation, accused Johnson of starting like a peacock when it comes to the tax bill on Mark Belling's radio show this week. So
I miss that.
It's been interesting. Johnson has got a lot of national attention the last couple of days, but it hasn't really set well with some people like Jim Sensenbrenner about how he's doing it, versus, like Sensenbrenner said, making a phone call privately to Mitch McConnell and saying, hey, I need this. What can we do?
But when you and I first interviewed Ron Johnson, he was just a candidate. He said two things. I want to repeal the Affordable Care Act, and I really am serious about the deficit. So he doesn't. Is he casting aside his years of concerns about the deficit, which is now $20 trillion with a T?
If he is, he's not alone. I mean, Paul Ryan was all about deficits when President Obama was president, but now we're talking about this. That's not an issue, read these guys, right? So it is about passing a tax package that there, and again, there are, it's not just about the benefits of a tax package in their minds, it's about the what have you done with control of this, basically the entire apparatus of Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
What is your accomplishment? They promised to repeal the Affordable Care Act. They didn't do that. They promised to cut taxes. Is that going to happen? This is a big must-do for them right now.
So when Johnson says, neither the House nor the Senate bill provide fair treatment, if they can pass it without me, let them. I don't think they can pass it without him. He's saying, make me a better offer, and I'm there.
What is it, 52-48 right now?
Yeah.
He's got issues. Corker's got issues. Collins has got issues. And those are the ones we've read about. He's the only one saying, I'm a no right now. So that's got you down to 51. You can lose one more and the vice president break the tie. You can't lose three total and get that through.
Okay, now staying in Washington for our second topic, the unfolding drama in Alabama over U.S. Senate candidate Roy Moore has forced our senior Republicans here in Wisconsin to first kind of say if the allegations are true, but now they're saying Paul Ryan, these allegations are credible. If he cares about the values and the people he claims to care about, then he should step aside. Ron Johnson, it'd be nice if he'd step aside and we could come up with some system for electing a different Republican, one of two U.S. Senate candidates, Kevin Nicholson. If I lived in Alabama, how's that? I would want Roy Moore out. The governor said simply Roy Moore should step aside. And Leah Vukmir, who is up against Nicholson in the U.S. Senate primary, Moore's conduct, as described, is very disturbing and should disqualify anyone from serving in public office. None of these positions are surprising, but a few of our Republicans had to kind of be nudged into taking them.
And don't forget, now we have Al Franken. That is a Democrat's problem.
Which I know you want to address later.
We will talk about that later. But what was interesting is that we're in a culture right now in politics where if somebody in your party sins, you're asked to answer for that person's sins. And this is part of what's going on is, okay, Roy Moore is a hot issue, so all right. Governor Walker, you are chair, or were until like this week, chair of our Republican Governor Association.
RGA.
You're a national figure in the party. How do you feel about this? House Speaker Paul Ryan, you are a national figure. How do you feel about this? Leah Vukmir and Kevin Nicholson, if you were to win the Senate seat, you could have to serve or possibly serve with Roy Moore. There's a connection there in that regard that Republicans put on the spot when it comes to Roy Moore because of this big picture thing. And Ron Johnson, he serves in the Senate, you know, and Mitch McConnell is saying not only should Roy Moore step out, but there's this talk about whether they even would seat him if he were to win the race.
Or well, there's all these other things in play. Can the governor call a new special election? That's and would he be expelled?
Mm-hmm.
And so you have Wisconsin Republicans. This, if especially if Roy Moore wins in December 2 or 6 or
12th,
something.
December 12th. 12th.
Thanks for the correction. They would have to serve with him, and Ron Johnson would vote to expel. So it's not an issue that's going to go away, is it?
No, and if he wins, everything he says becomes an issue for Republicans. We have to answer. It looks like with President Trump, right? When he says something controversial, we all go ask, you know, Governor Walker, Ron Johnson, Paul Ryan.
We have to.
What do you say? What do you think about this? This is the president of, you know, the head of your party, essentially. It's again, the sins of your party become the sins you have to answer for.
Yeah, really. Okay, time to finally turn away from Washington to a state issue. I did not see the bill to lower the drinking age coming. Now, it's sponsored by Representative Adam Jarko and Rob Swearingen, former president of the Tavern League, and Cindy Duco, 99th District. It's opposed by Mothers Against Drunk Driving. The 21-year-old drinking age has proven to be one of the nation's most important and life-saving laws to protect youth. But there's interesting dynamics because Speaker Voss doesn't support this.
No, and it's basically, this is not going to happen. There's a provision in the bill that says it would change if we wouldn't lose federal highway dollars. This is the problem. That option is not going to go away. The feds, back in the 86-ish, convinced states to change their drinking age. We were in the last holdouts, I believe. I was still in grade school. Convinced us to change because if you didn't change your drinking age to 21, you lost federal highway dollars. We have a federal highway. We have a highway funding crunch.
Shortfall.
Are we going to give up that money to change the drinking age? I don't think so. This is more of an idea about the philosophy of where the age should be than an actual thing will happen in practice. And, you know, unless, hey, if President Trump and Congress change that policy, yeah, maybe you see this happen. But as long as you're talking about losing federal money, it's not going to be a real
option. Well, when Jarko says there's a process by which states could potentially be waived out of that penalty, and when you ask, the State Department of Transportation says the potential penalty, $53 million. Now, when we have a shortfall of, pick a number, $700 million, $800, $900 million, a billion. This is a huge deal. So you don't see this bill going anywhere, not even being debated?
No, but I understand the philosophy that we're talking about, you know, states' rights issues, what should the right drinking age be? We have all these debates about binge drinking culture in college and compare that to Europe with lower drink. I understand the philosophy behind it, but in talking to people about the fate of the bill, I don't see this having momentum this session to get done.
But Jarko says, at 19 years old, there are a few things that you cannot do, but they cannot enjoy an alcoholic beverage. He's referring, of course, you could go to Iraq, Afghanistan, yep, and all these other legal contracts that you could enter into. But here's interesting. Jarko is now a candidate for the special election in the 10th to replace Sheila Harsdorff. Drinking age, I think, is going to potentially become a major issue, don't you?
Possibly. I mean, there are a couple other issues in that race. Shannon Zimmerman's the other state rep who's running for that seat. They are on different sides of Foxconn, for example. Zimmerman brought up that he supported Foxconn, that bill came up. Jarko voted against it. So you'll watch some issues like that. A primary like that is about how do you create differentiate yourself from your opponent. So for those guys, it's going to be going through votes. See, I voted for this and you didn't. I voted for this and you didn't. You know, that's how you kind of show differences sometimes. And, you know, people who are backing you.
Zimmerman is a freshman. Jarko's only been there
sophomore,
two terms.
Yeah.
So it's very interesting. You could go essentially from the Assembly to the Senate, and in Zimmerman's case, 3 years.
Yeah.
That's
well,
just very intriguing.
For both of them, it's a free pass. You know, if they lose, big deal. They're still in the Assembly if they have their seat.
Okay. Another issue this week in the Capitol. $600,000 in the state budget the governor signed to study prisons. Now, a little bit of background. Our first prison in Waupun opened in 1853. In Green Bay, that one opened in 1898. If you look at the Fiscal Bureau number, we're 126% over our design capacity. The last prison opened in 2001, Red Granite. 2001, the Milwaukee Secure Detention Facility opened. And in 2001, we bought Stanley. We haven't built or bought a prison in 16 years. So there is a critical need with some of these aging prisons. So there's 600,000. Senator Scott Fitzgerald, the majority leader, names to the study committee Senators Van Wongard, Dan Fian, and LaTanya Johnson, a Democrat from Milwaukee. African Americans in the assembly this week, led by Mr. Crowley, Mr. Fields, said, hey, there should be some African American representation on the assembly members of the panel, but Speaker Voss
Or even a Dem.
Or even a Dem, thank you. But Speaker Boss has named Michael Schrott, Chair of Corrections, Mark Byrne, whose district perhaps has the biggest number of prisons, and David Steffen. Do you think this is a done issue? Do you think Voss can find some reverse and maybe find a Dem or an African-American?
Maybe. It's hard to say Robin Voss would back down from this. Steffen, for example, is pushing for a bill that would the Green Bay prison up there.
Privatize.
Sell that property, build a new one.
Privatize it.
There is that issue up there. I believe one of the four African-American lawmakers who wrote the letter to Voss saying, hey, we should be, you know, there should be a Democratic voice in this committee, an African-American voice in this committee. Wrote a letter to Governor Walker saying, hey, you have picks for this committee. Why don't you put me on this committee to try and bring a voice there that's needed?
That's a potential compromise.
So watch for that. But, you know, it's an odd decision by Robin to not include a Democrat on the committee, period. Now, there's obviously the Lincoln Hills issue in the background of this. If you put a Democrat on that committee, they may use, he or she may use that as a platform to bring up the problems of the correction system. Maybe it's about that. Either way, Dems are unhappy because that is not the way we usually do things in Wisconsin. Usually, if you have a commission like this,
yes,
you get picks, they're bipartisan.
And here's why that's even more relevant. If you go to the DOC website on January 1, the percentage of African-American adult males in prison, 43% of male adults in Wisconsin prisons were African-Americans. The number for females, 21%. So there is some statistical relevancy to the request by African-Americans from Milwaukee to do that. Okay, let's hear. Malin Mitchell is now, I think, if you go to the Elections Commission website, the 16th Democratic candidate. Let's listen to a little bit of what he told his supporters when he announced this week for governor.
Governor's priority is not our children. I mean, you can't take $1.6 billion in your first two budgets from public education, and then in the last budget, by the way, before you run for office, and put $600 million back and call that progress. I mean, as a wise man once said, that's like taking a knife, putting it 8 inches in my back, and pulling out four, and I'm supposed to say thank you. It doesn't work.
Okay, let's look at Malin's resume. Mm-hmm. Madison firefighter, president of the Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin, ran for lieutenant governor in the 2012 recall, and I just looked up the number. He got 1.5 million votes. Of course, that's 45% because Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish got 55%. He said, in addition to the clip you just heard, when we give $3 billion away, a reference to Foxconn, and we say we don't have money to fund things that are essential services for our communities, that's a problem. I think we create jobs from the inside out. And before I give you a chance, JR, just the GOP party spokesman, Alex Zimmerman, after being rejected by voters once before, Mitchell is doubling down on the failed policies of yesterday. Is Mitchell and Tony Evers the Act 10 legacy Democrats so far?
That's a good question, and ask people about this race or Mitchell's entry into the race. There is a vibe that he could become the Labor candidate because he is obviously president of Professional Firefighters of Wisconsin. He talked about Act 10 and launching his campaign. There are several unions who might get behind him. So in one regard, that could be a boom for Mitchell, right? You're talking about a multi-candidate field where raising money is difficult. If you have unions behind you, they can, even if they don't have money anymore because they've lost resources through Act 10 and losing dues and membership, they can still tell members to turn out. You know, send out emails, hey, primaries, August, whatever, go get out there and vote. They can get money from their national affiliates that funnel through to them to help in the race. That could be a boon for them. The issue, though, is if you're the Labor candidate, which could be good in a primary, Scott Walker's wheelhouse is running against big union bosses, right? He loves that contrast. He was talking about it again in the past couple weeks about big union bosses coming after him. Of course, I heard from one Democrat this week, like, which ones are left? You know, they decimated the public employee unions with Act 10 6 years ago. But Walker would love that contrast of, here's somebody trying to take us back, we did before, that's not, we're going forward. So that could be an issue for Mitchell. Other benefits of his candidacy, or good things for him, is most of the field is 58 or older and Caucasian. You know, he is 40, I believe, African-American. He's got a good stump speech. There are people I talked this week who think he could be a good, you know, kind of standard bearer for the party who might excite people more than these other candidates who, you know, quite frankly, no offense to people who are older than I am, but they're not, you know, a young, energetic, kind of like a contrast to Walker, who is 40, upper 40s right now.
No, he just turned 50.
Okay.
He announced his reelect 2 days after he turned 50.
So, you know, so there's that. That's the dynamic I'm thinking about Mitchell. But it is such a wide field right now. The math becomes, what do you need to win that nomination? If you do have 10, 12, I mean, let's be honest. Whatever number have registered so far to run for governor, when it comes time to turn nomination papers, that number will shrink.
It will.
When we see January finance reports and see who's actually a viable candidate, that number may shrink some more.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I had a chance to talk to former state Democratic Chair Joe Winicky this week, and he said, pay a special attention to the January fundraising reports. It's going to show who's really viable financially and who isn't. So was Joe right?
Yes, and if nobody is really grabbing a hold of this race, you may see other people get in after those reports come out.
Sogland has said, I am inclined Sogland's to get in after January 1. Excuse me.
Talked to Kelda Royce this week. She said that she is still looking at it. If she gets in, it'll be after the holidays. So and there's also the theory of the mythical Democratic candidate who's got deep pockets can say, well, these guys haven't raised anything. I can write a check for X million dollars and be a legitimate candidate right away. So we're watching that come January of who's viable. And for Mitchell, again, having union support, if he does win it, I mean, we haven't had any endorsements yet besides like Gwen Moore, I think, for his campaign.
Yes.
But if unions get behind him, they could become a financial boost for him in this slog for money we're hearing about from Democratic candidates.
Well, how big of a... How important is it that Malin got $1.15 million in 2012?
Well, the question kind of becomes, is it because of Malin that he got those votes or because he was the alternative to Rebecca Clayfish? Because remember, in the recall election, you know, the focus was on Walker. It was unusual because usually the governor's going to govern on the same ticket.
They're yoked up.
But in the recall, it's different rules. But do you think it will turn out because of Malin Mitchell? I think it's more about whether you wanted to say, I support the recall or I think it's a bad idea. Than it was about the. I mean, honestly, I don't know. I'm sure it mattered who you put up there, Lieutenant Governor, would have gotten, I think it was 1.15 million or something like that, but would have gotten those votes because they were the alternative to Rebecca Clayfish in an environment all about Act 10.
Yeah, and just to circle back to my interview or my discussion with former Chair Joe Winicky, his rating right now, Tony Evers, because he's won statewide, but then he also says Malin and Representative Walks have to be taken seriously.
Yes, I mean, and it, depending who you talk to, you know, Annie Gronick might fit in that top tier of candidates, you know, Kathleen Vinehout, all these people, Kathleen Vinehout, Mike McCabe, they're all trying to break into that top tier because if you have 10, 12 candidates, it could be 15%, 20% wins you the primary. My guess is going to be by next August, somebody grabs a hold of the race, and it's going to be a 2 or 3 person race for like 70% of the electorate, and the other guys are fighting for 30 to 40%, something like that.
It's absolutely fascinating. We may have other entries. Okay, I want to dwell on this shortly. This great debate over America's Dairyland.
I call us political catnip.
Well done. That's been on our license plates since 1940. And Kurt Bauer, the chair of the Statewide Chamber of Commerce, WMC, said, you know, that's kind of antiquated. Maybe we should change it. Didn't offer anything instead. But the governor this week said, the plates are just fine the way they are. We're proud to be America's Dairyland. There are many different industries, but our bread and butter, he said that, literally and figuratively, is still agriculture and manufacturing together. No big surprise.
No.
Why is this catnip?
Because it's just like a sideshow. I mean, like, the dairy industry got really up in arms about the idea of not being America's Dairyland on the license plate anymore. I think I went back and looked. The first appearance of that phrase on the license plate was 1940-ish. So it's been there for, I mean, even the old yellow license plates, well, I remember from the 80s.
I remember those. Sure.
I mean, it's been like our identity, right? I mean, people think about us that way, and that's part of the argument from Kurt Bauer and Representative Scott Allen, who put out a bill that would have had a art contest with high school kids to try and find a new license plate, is that we are moving past that toward, with Foxconn coming in, the Wisconsin Valley idea Governor Walker's talked about, why aren't we talking about that? Issue is, this is like culture, man. You don't take away cheeseheads, you know,
and
in Wisconsin.
And it reminds me of the debate over what to put on the quarter. And Jim Doyle went back and forth, and it reminds me of that. And
I
think there's a cow on our quarter.
There was a cow. Was it a cow, a wheel of cheese, and a cob of corn or something like that? Yep. I think Governor Doyle, that was his least. I mean, all the pains in the butt about being governor, I think he enjoyed that the least, having to pick a quarter to sign. I really do.
I couldn't agree more. Okay, time for your stock picks. Rising.
So, Paul Ryan, look, this guy has spent how many, 20 years working toward tax reform?
Wonk.
Or tax overhaul, whatever word you want to use. This, he got it through the House. I mean, all the pitfalls of being House Speaker and the pains, or pains in the butt, of being House Speaker, he got this bill through his chamber. Now, getting it through his chamber is no guarantee of being a success, because the Senate approved with health care, Affordable Care Act, it's not guaranteed they're going to act on it. But for Ryan, it's another example of how, if you look at like what's happening in Washington, D.C., and the inaction by Republicans, he can say, look, we're getting stuff done in our chamber. Mm-hmm. It's the Senate that's the problem.
Okay. Mixed.
So, Randy Bryce, there's a question I keep asking operatives and get different answers about, but it's, when does Randy Bryce go from being a candidate to keep Paul Ryan busy, the candidate who's a legitimate threat to beat Paul Ryan next fall? In the past couple of weeks, we've seen the DCCC add the first district to its list of targets. Now, it now has 91 targets, so I'm not sure that means it's like a really top-tier race, but they're paying attention to it. I've seen a string of polls that have Paul Ryan's job numbers upside down, or I should say split, you know, 47-46 for job approval or for favorability, basically.
Yeah.
In part, that's because he's a national figure now. He's being pulled away. He goes home the first every weekend, right? But he's still a national figure being pulled away from the first to do House Speaker things. You know, it's not a popular body right now. It's affecting him back home. But he also has $10 million plus bucks in the bank. You know, Randy Bryce has had the story about how he didn't pay. He was in arrears on his child support. Didn't pay it off until after he announced for Congress. I've heard rumblings about other stories coming about this guy. He could take some more sheen off of him. So it's again that question of, when does he go from being like this kind of fundraising phenom with a great introductory video to being a real threat to Paul Ryan? I'm not sure if he's crossed that threshold yet.
And did I hear you say that Bryce has been endorsed by Bernie Sanders?
He was endorsed by Bernie Sanders this week. That, you know, again, that is, even though he's got a Democratic opponent for the nomination, the coalescing of the liberal, progressive, and Democratic establishment and forces behind Bryce, because they see he raised $1 million in 3 months. You know, this guy's got something going on.
Yeah. Okay. Falling.
So Roy Moore and Al Franken, I mean, they're not Wisconsin people, okay?
But.
So that's unusual. But because of their misdeeds, they're forcing Wisconsin politicians to answer questions about what they did. And now, you know, with Democrats, we talked about Roy Moore and Republicans. Tammy Baldwin's campaign, so she's giving back the money she got from Franken's leadership PAC. Randy Bryce is giving back the money he got from Franken's leadership PAC. I talked to some operatives about this yesterday, and the feedback I got was, you know, voters aren't really moved, I don't think, by, okay, Roy Moore did something bad, Republicans therefore are evil, or like Al Franken did this, so Democrats are evil. I don't think they're moved by that. But what operatives see is a chance to get candidates on the record or force them off of their talking points to ask about an issue that they don't want to talk about.
Right.
And you open the door to having there be mistakes, much like Governor Walker was on Mike Boucher's show last weekend. And, you know, you got to kind of give benefit of the doubt, but the window, because he taped it on Friday. It just kind of come out. And it aired on Sunday. On Monday was the you know, things got a little more serious, the woman accusing Moore of sexual assault. So Walker's first answer was, if true, we should drop out. Then he added this weird kind of aside about, in 2012, he's running for the recall elections, he brought up that there was this rumor,
and let's not repeat, because it was spurious.
But none of us covered it.
I know.
But he was asked about it by, I think he said, a Swedish journalist who was here covering the recall. But he brought it up in a program, interjected into the, why would you do that? And then he also likened the sexual assault stuff to that in some way. And I don't think he meant to, but that's kind of the impression he gave. That's an example of getting a politician off his talking points and open the door to a stumble, which then gives opponents fodder to kind of knock him for it, much like with the Franken and Moore stuff. That's why they're asking about it. Hey, what have you asked? I mean, we get these emails. Have you guys asked Baldwin about this? Have you asked Ryan about this?
Right.
It's all about that opportunity to knock him off their talking
points. And just a P.S. on that. So now what you have is Tammy Baldwin up for re-election next year. She is a kindred spirit of Al Franken philosophically. Now, she had to come out and say, yes, I think the Senate Ethics Committee should look at my good friend, Senator Al Franken. So it's very, very interesting.
And then you're getting people pushing, okay, well, why aren't you calling on him to resign? If you want Roy Moore out, why aren't you calling him to resign? The Democrats go, well, if you want Franken to resign, why don't you want President Trump to resign? You know, it becomes a circular firing squad of like, well, and it's this tribalism in politics anymore of, my side is good, so I can rip your side, but I'll protect mine. The same thing comes up. It's kind of, it's an unpleasant side effect of that tribalism going on in Washington, D.C.
And
right
it's
now.
Going to become an issue in Wisconsin politics in the 2018 election.
Possibly.
Okay. Just a reminder, we're because of the Thanksgiving holiday, there'll be no Rewind next week, but J.R. will be back right here having fun on December 1. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for November 17th.
Rewind, Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.